Brian, thank you. Boris Johnson's bid to scrap parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol cleared its first major hurdle in the House of Commons last night. Despite EU warnings that the plan is illegal, the vote allows the legislation to undergo detailed scrutiny in the coming weeks. The Democratic Unionist Party has said it will consider returning to power-sharing arrangements at Stormont once and if the bill passes. For more on this, I'm joined by John Tong, British and Irish politics professor at the University of Liverpool. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
You were tweeting last night that in December of 2019 and January 2020, all Conservative MPs voted in favour of the EU withdrawal agreement, which contained the Northern Ireland Protocol. But last night, they all voted in favour of a bill disapplying the protocol. Now, I know it probably didn't come as a surprise, despite the Prime Minister having been weakened in recent months, did it?
Well, there were some notable abstentions, it should be acknowledged, on the Conservative side. Theresa May, for example, the previous Prime Minister, Simon Hoare, the chair of the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee, they refused to back their government. But given the speeches that they gave during the parliamentary debate, in which they accused their own government of breaking international law, you might have expected them to actually vote against their government. I think what was clear last night was that no Conservatives were prepared to vote against the government, and that this bill, disapplying the protocol, will pass the House of Commons. I don't think there's any question about that now, and it's going to be fast-tracked through the Commons. The big question now will be, will it pass the House of Lords? And that's still a difficult question to answer. But there'll be more pressure now, I think, placed upon the Lords to pass it, because what I'd expect in the autumn, after the Assembly, Northern Ireland Assembly summer recess, first week in September, the DUP might go back into the Assembly, at least, not the power-sharing executive, go back into the Assembly. And so the government can turn around to the House of Lords and say, look, the DUP's gone back in to the institutions, the Good Friday Group institutions. Are you prepared to vote down a bill that could pull the DUP out of those institutions? So, you know, in this difficult game of chess, you can see where the next moves might be coming.
The pressure is on at that point. Now, you mentioned the former Prime Minister, Theresa May. She said she's not going to support the legislation, and she delivered a withering assessment of its legality and its impact. We'll just take a quick listen to some of what she had to say.
Thinking about this bill, I actually started off by asking myself three questions. First of all, do I consider this to be legal under international law? Second, will it achieve its aims? And third, does it at least maintain the standing of the United Kingdom in the eyes of the world? And my answer to all three of those questions is no.
You know what she said as well, which I found interesting, was when she survived the vote of no confidence, she felt that when she went to Europe that they disregarded her, that she was a lame duck prime minister. And she said that is what Boris Johnson is now too.
And there is a real risk of that. I mean, the fact that Boris Johnson had 148 rebels, 41% of his own parliamentary party, voting against him only recently, and has had catastrophic by-election reverses since, might mean that Boris Johnson is a lame-duck prime minister. But Boris Johnson is determined to carry on. There's no natural successor to him. And the fact is, the rules of the game within the Conservative Party, in formal terms at least, prevent a challenge to Boris Johnson for the best part of another year now. So it's probably likely that the EU will still carry on having to deal with Boris Johnson and with a foreign secretary in Liz Truss, who is miles apart from the European Union position. And Liz Truss had the option of triggering Article 16 to suspend the protocol. That would have been the clearly legal route for the British government to go down, to at least park the protocol. But she's made clear that she regards Article 16 as simply an extended grace period for aspects of suspensions of checks of the protocol. She's not prepared to do that. She wants to disapply it in lots of different ways, everything from who ultimately is the arbiter of the protocol, right through to whether there should be any checks on goods going from Great Britain to Northern Ireland only. So the two sides, the EU and the British government, are probably as far apart as they were at the start on this issue.
Liz Truss faced some fairly tricky questions on the bill last night. We'll take a listen to her response to this one from the Labour MP, Hilary Benn.
Why is the government not proposing to use the legal method to raise these questions with the European Union through the treaty that it signed, rather than one claiming necessity, when the Foreign Secretary is yet to give me a single example where the British government has claimed necessity for abrogating a treaty that it has negotiated and signed?
Well, Madam Speaker, the reason I'm putting this bill forward is because I'm a patriot and I'm a Democrat.
So she's refused to rule out triggering Article 16 further down the line. What need to happen in order for her to do that, in your view, John?
Well, it's interesting that she didn't rule out Article 16, Liz Truss, because that obviously indicates a lack of faith in the capacity to actually pass this bill. Liz Truss clearly wary of the House of Lords possibly defeating the bill there, because you wouldn't need Article 16 if you could simply apply this domestic bill, which would disallow many aspects of the protocol. In effect, the bill that was put before the House of Commons last night and got through by a big majority of 74 gives the DUP what it wants in terms of suspending most aspects of the protocol. And the only checks that would take place on goods going between Great Britain and Northern Ireland would be on those that were definitely going south of the border on the island of Ireland. So, and the DUP could probably live with that and go back into power sharing as a consequence. But clearly Liz Truss wants to keep Article 16 as a possible option if she can't get this bill through. The mystery is the sequencing. Why not trigger Article 16 first and stay legal? Because there's no doubt whatsoever that the EU, I think, will challenge the UK government in terms of the legality of this bill that is going through Parliament at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Can you solve the mystery of the sequencing?
No, I think that the British government is very anxious to get the Good Friday Agreement institutions back working again, and so the quick fix in the British government's view was to fast track a domestic piece of legislation, because if you just simply suspend the protocol via Article 16, then that puts everything back into negotiation. In many ways, the British government has engaged in brinkmanship here and just said, well, there isn't going to be negotiation. This is what we want in terms of modification of the protocol. Here's the bill that provides those modifications, and the EU can, you know, huff and puff. But the EU's huffing and puffing will no doubt end up in court further down the track. So this has got an awful long way to run. If the Lords does resist the bill, then the rules are that under the Parliament Act, the government can trigger the Parliament Act in the UK Parliament, which would require then the Lords to accept defeat on the bill come the 27th of June next year, i.e. 1 year from the second reading that was passed last night. So Parliament, the Lords can only delay this bill. This bill will probably go through, but that won't be the end of the story, because the EU is taking a very dim view.
And you do expect that the Lords will delay the bill?
Yeah, I think there'll probably be some significant amendments that will hold things up, because you haven't got you didn't have a pro-Brexit majority in the Lords, let alone a pro-protocol, this pro-protocol bill majority. So I'd expect a fairly attritional battle there. The Commons is clearly not the problem. The Conservatives, you know, if they were going to rebel, it would have been last night, and I think that's going through. But there'll be a lot of pressure on the Lords, because the Good Friday Agreement institutions are potentially at stake here. The DUP will only go back into the power-sharing executive, really, if this bill is passed. If there's no bill passed, the DUP aren't going back into the power-sharing executive, and the Good Friday Agreement collapses. That's the pretty stark vista. I mean, trying to get cross-community consensus on the Northern Ireland Protocol is like chasing a rainbow. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get there. So ultimately, you know, there have to be winners and losers in terms of the Northern Ireland Protocol.
So this desire then to get the DUP back in, how does that fit with Brandon Lewis's threat, if you want to call it that, that he's prepared to cut MLA wages unless they return to Stormont? How likely is that to happen?
Well, that's the other strand of the government's anxiety to get the DUP back into the institutions. The DUP, for its part, has said, look, we don't care about the salaries. They know full well also that Brandon Lewis will not completely stop the salaries. One of the previous secretaries of state, when salaries were reduced before, only cut them by 25%. And remember that MLAs will carry on doing constituency work. So let's say there'll be a 25% reduction from their current 50-odd thousand pound salary. That won't be enough in itself to get the DUP back into the institutions, but it may help, you know, encourage them. So I could see a scenario where the DUP go back in September into the Assembly only, but their return to the power-sharing executive, first of all, doesn't have to take place until the end of October anyway, under previous legislation passed by Westminster, which allows 24 weeks after the Assembly election for the executive to be restored. So the DUP's got longer anyway to go back into the power-sharing executive, and the DUP won't go that far back into the institutions until the bill is actually passed. So we'll be in a halfway house, I suspect, in the autumn. The DUP back into an assembly, but not back into the government of Northern Ireland.
I want to ask you about something else, which is the focus of attention where you are. Nicola Sturgeon explaining later on today how she plans to hold the second referendum on Scottish independence. Now, if that referendum were to be granted, John, does Brexit provide the Scots with a better case to leave the United Kingdom?
Yeah, an independent Scotland within the European Union is obviously an attractive prospectus for a large number of Scots. And the Scottish nationalist case will be starting at a much higher level than when the starting gun was fired for the independence referendum of 2014, where support for nationalists appeared to be only at around one third of Scottish voters. Now, you know, as we know, the SNP is around on the 45% mark. So there is a real possibility that an independence referendum could be won by the nationalists. But it's going to be a consultative referendum only, in the sense the British government is not going to agree to have a formally binding referendum. Boris Johnson is not going to do what David Cameron did in 2012 when he agreed with Alex Salmond the Edinburgh Agreement, in which both sides agreed that the referendum result would be binding. So it wasn't just a consultative referendum. So the legal position is quite clear, that the union can only be dissolved by the Westminster government. The Scottish government can hold a referendum, but it would only have consultative status. And the risk with such an independence referendum, if it only has that status, is that it will be boycotted by unionists within Scotland. So you'll end up with a Catalan situation in which you've got a 92% vote for Catalan independence in 2017, but only on a 43% turnout. Mm-hmm. The Scottish independence referendum had an 85% turnout in 2014. So again, you know, we're potentially heading for a constitutional crisis here over who really has legitimacy on this subject.
So she'll need to decide, like Nicola Sturgeon will need to decide whether to take that risk, right?
Yeah, I mean, she will, but she's under a lot of pressure from her own party to get some momentum in terms of the independence case. And the SNP is very, very confident they can win a second independence referendum. But the difference this time is the British government will not concede the legitimacy of a second independence referendum, arguing, you know, the 2014 result should stand for a generation, the words that were used by Nicola Sturgeon's predecessor, Alex Salmond, the once-in-a-generation event he described the referendum as. But the SNP will not, palpably is not going to give up on this, and so the distinct possibility that a referendum of sorts will be held next autumn, which again will be yet another problem in Boris Johnson's ever-mounting difficult entry.
John, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time today. That's Professor John Tong, who is British and Irish politics professor at the University of Liverpool. Coming up next, we'll be talking COVID with David Nabarro from the World Health Organization.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.